I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to continue our conversation about President Donald Trump's controversial immigration restrictions. Last week, we discussed the case against the immigration ban. Today, we'll tackle the case for it. My guests are security expert Peter Bearing, former Indianapolis Police Chief Troy Riggs, who is now with the Sagamore Institute, and Butler University Sociology and Criminology Professor Marvin Scott. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about continuing our conversation about the immigration ban, immigration restrictions that President Donald Trump, I don't think we can say really has imposed because it's in some limbo right now. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Peter Bearing. He is a security expert. Troy Riggs, who's former Indianapolis police chief and now is with the Sagamore Institute. And Marvin Scott, who's professor of sociology and criminology at Butler University. Troy and Marvin are veterans of the program. I think this is Peter's first appearance, but welcome to all of you.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, indeed.
It's good to have you here. So I'm just going to start at the beginning. I asked when we were doing the conversation kind of from the other side, people why, if they were opposed to the ban and why, and, you know, got the rationale there. I'm going to start first with Peter. Is the ban a good idea and why?
Well, I think the notion behind the ban, it really dates back to the early days of the Republic when information transfer didn't happen very quickly. You had to wait for somebody to ride it in on a horse or bring it in on a Conestoga wagon. And notionally, in those times, people believed that the executive branch had better access to more timely information. Fast forward to 2017, and I'm not sure that that's the case. And there are quite a number of people who have publicly expressed concerns about the ban itself, how it was implemented in terms of what information they were relying on. And those were many of the concerns in terms of do we have the right information to arrive at this sort of a measure, quite apart from the policy questions of is this good policy, is this in the best interest of the Republic, and the other political questions that have surrounded this conversation.
Troy.
Well, one of the things I want to say is that obviously we're an open country. We have been. We're a great country because of that. But been in a position of leadership in three different cities now and dealing with homeland security issues. And I'm not going to talk about any of the specifics of some of the cases. But there are individuals that make it into our country that are a threat at times, that get through the system. What I think happened in this case was it's been very politicized. I don't think it was rolled out in the most thoughtful manner possible. There are still many people coming to this country from areas that we have sent terrorists before to this country. But there is something unites a Democratic president and Republican president, that these are the seven countries that we really need to be focused on. I would have liked to have seen a better explanation on why this is needed. But I will tell you this, that terrorists only have to be right one time. We have to be right 100% of the time. And to monitor people when they come in is a responsibility of the United States government. It's a solely responsibility of federal government. We have not done a very good job of that in the past. That hopefully that will improve over time. But there's a couple things we have to be wary of, and I am as well, when we talk about a complete ban. I know there's a time frame, but we need to make sure that we don't slip back into our history where we've seen in the World War II, where Japanese Americans were in prison, some Germans, some Italians. That's not where we want to be as a country. We know that failed. For everything we've known now, history has taught us these were good, hardworking Americans trying to make a difference. Some volunteered to fight against their home country. So that was a concern. But then on the other side, in most recent history, that affected a future president, then a governor of Arkansas, was when the Fidel Castro took advantage of people trying to leave his country and flee to the United States for freedom. And because of political repression, they were getting on boats, and Fidel Castro took it upon himself at that time to release prisoners, not prisoners because of political dissent, murderers, robbers, and it caused a riot in Arkansas as a result. That's what we're trying to keep from as a government, but I think that there certainly needs to be more explanation. There needs to be more of a dialogue when, you know, as Peter's talking about how it used to be and now time and information travels faster. People want information. They want to make that discussion. So I'm in the camp that I can see the value of it, but I can also see the warning signs of what could happen and what people are fearful. We need to stop being so polarized and going to separate corners and kind of meet in the middle and discuss these issues as Americans, realizing that our safety is at stake. We need to take that seriously, and we also need to take seriously that we are still the beacon of the world for freedom-loving people.
Marvin.
I agree with what Joy said. Makes sense. However, we need to talk about homegrown terrorists, people who are copycats, who want to emulate those people who would bring destruction to our democracy. But I want to take it a step further. For instance, we're talking about immigration. I want to talk about that wall that was proposed. And just quickly, I want to say I think I have a solution for that. The family and I took a trip down the Baja in Mexico. And we had a chance to see many of the enclaves of Americans living there who are retirees. Here's the deal. For every geezer like me they let into Mexico, they can have a family come over from Mexico into America. If they want to work in Iowa in the slaughter factories or whatever they do out there, good luck. Because I'd like to enjoy my waning years in the sunshine and being able to hear the waves of the ocean. And I think that's one way of eliminating having to have a wall. We can let people in, we can let people out, and we can talk about a flow. I think there are many solutions to many of the things that are talked about in government today that have simple solutions. And maybe that one is too simple. But the people are already there. The track record is set. Why not do it? Now, I was not elected as president, vice president, or secretary of state by the majority or the minority, and I don't make enough money to have an opinion. I mean, these guys have got big bucks. So who the heck would listen to me on any of these issues? I just have ideas, and like the one I just gave you, is a way in which we could transition into things and maintain our respectability in the wider world's marketplace.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the immigration ban, immigration restrictions that have become sort of a defining feature of the early days of the Trump presidency. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what our regular listener and contributor Jerry has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry writes, Donald J. Trump's reaction to judicial action on his immigration order reminds me of the person who, stopped for speeding in a school zone, tells the officer, I have to go fast. I'm on my way to pick up my kids at school. President Trump appears really to believe that he can make America safe again by contravening the principles and institutions which have preserved the republic through more than two centuries in an increasingly dangerous world. Jerry, I'm going to take the liberty here of reframing your comment as a kind of question, and I'm going to toss it, I think, to Troy first, which is, you tried to carve out in your answer something resembling a middle ground and create
right.
some space to get beyond the polarization. When we did this conversation last week, kind of from the other side, folks pointed out, you know, right now, before the average refugee gets in here, it's a year and a half, 2 year vetting process. How much more time do you need? Are there, given that this ban has created a tremendous amount of division in the country, and that, you know, there's at least 50-50 chance it's not going to stand up. It's in court right now, you know, again, I don't know which way it's going to go. I gave up trying to predict where judges were going to land a long time ago. But you got to figure that the early days did not go with the administration. Early arguments did not. Are there common sense ways, I'm picking up also on ways that would not be controversial, that would not be divisive, that would protect people's liberties and what we think of, but also enhance security that we could implement without fighting each other?
There are some common sense ways, and a lot of that is working with a lot of the countries that we're dealing with. And there's some other things that government can do to properly vet, and that's what I'm hopeful that the new administration is doing, is looking at a way to properly vet, and hopefully we'll hear more of that down the road, because that benefits all of us. And it also benefits the people that are trying to come here and live safely as well. But when you look at the countries that individuals at this point, the president is saying that we need to be blocked. Not getting into if that's a wise thing to do for 200 plus days or not. But let's just talk about those countries. Trying to properly vet individuals coming from those countries is very difficult. You're talking about many cases. Take Syria, for example. People fleeing the country in massive amounts because of the horrible things that the Syrian dictator has done. As we as a country certainly want to help individuals and open our borders. But even President Obama was very careful in doing that because he knew the dangers. There has to be approach. And we cannot take the word of a dictator in their vetting process to make sure we have a proper vetting process. It's easy to slip someone in. It's easy to slip someone in with the knowledge and the means necessary. It's just another part of that overall security we need to take seriously and look at that. But I think there is common ground to open those borders, to allow people to come in that have been properly vetted, have a vetting system, and if it takes 2 years, let it take 2 years. If it takes 5 years, let it take 5 years. But number one responsibility is to make sure that we have a safe republic. But what's not going to happen with a contentious debate now is we're not going to come to a middle ground, and we're not going to come to these solutions because people have decided to go and be polarized and fight through this issue. And at this time, that means that most likely it's going to be harder for people to get in that we're trying to help, and it may even be easier for some people that are trying to harm us to get in as well. Time will tell.
Peter, some common sense steps we could take that wouldn't put us at each other's throats.
Well, I agree with Troy. I think that this is really a matter of examining the process. Once you're comfortable that you have a process that is going to adequately screen people, then that's going to eliminate many of these issues. The difficulty lies in deciding what that process looks like. There have been fair criticisms about what the process has looked like over the past number of years, and unfortunately, we've politicized many of these processes for years and years and years. And John, you and I have talked about this many times before. The Transportation Security Administration has been the face of counterterrorism, and we have looked at everything through the lens of airport checkpoints. And while many people come through airport checkpoints, those are by no means the only checkpoints that people cross into this country. And Troy's absolutely right. This is a very complicated exercise, and the bad guys only have to get it right once. We have to get it right all the time. And when you stand at a gateway airport or you stand at a border crossing on either of the borders, what you quickly realize is that this is a throughput problem where there are literally thousands of people and thousands of vehicles crossing into this country from all over the place. And this is a yeoman's task to develop a process that is thorough enough yet efficient enough so that crossing into the country isn't a problem. And what makes this even more complicated is the fact that what we decide here in the United States has a ripple effect elsewhere in the world. It's not just our gateway airports, it's European gateways, it's Asian gateways, it's Middle Eastern gateways, it's the African gateways. And unfortunately, this is a problem that is only going to get worse as our economy worldwide is very, very much global, far more global than it has ever been in the past.
Peter, I'm going to have to step in. We got to head to a break right now, but we'll pick this up on the other side. We're talking about the immigration policies of the Trump administration. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about continuing our conversation about President Trump's immigration ban, immigration restrictions. My guests are Peter Bearing, he's a security expert, Troy Riggs, who was formerly Indianapolis police chief and is now with the Sagamore Institute, and Marvin Scott, who's professor of sociology and criminology at Butler University. Peter, I had to cut you off as we headed to the break. I want to give you a chance to finish your thought.
Well, this is a complicated set of procedures that we're discussing that have ripple effects is the bottom line. And there are a lot of places that people enter and exit this country. Interestingly, there are 200 of them that have pavement, and there are a lot that don't. So we have to be cautious about how we craft these procedures, but those give us a middle practical ground for how to do this, and they tend to take the politics and a lot of the emotion out of it if we develop such a procedure, and then everybody kind of knows what that process looks like.
We're talking about immigration here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Bob has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Bob, welcome to the program.
Yes. First of all, welcome. I'm glad to have your guest on. Welcome to you both, all three of you. And I want to I have a two-parter. First, I want to give my comment first.
Okay.
Comment is that it's nothing. First of all, I didn't vote for Trump, but I do believe that every leadership that has been placed in office has been ordained by God. So having said, and I mean that by good or bad. Now, having said that, I just would like to say, you know, there's nothing wrong with using some wisdom. You know, let's face it, he's not asking for like 3-year ban. He just said a 3-month. Now, having said that, you know, you have other countries that have, you know, laws and everything. It's like you can't go in their country and do anything you want to do or make any decisions and come to that country because they have laws. And the Bible says obey the laws of the land. Now, having said that, my question is would you let anybody in your household after some kind of confrontation or an assault happen in your household? You would use some wisdom about going about the protocol about who you would let in your household. The Bible says the wisest serpent, but gentle as a dove. So having said that, it's nothing wrong with using it. I just think a lot of times, you know, we as people, we act out of ignorance and assume that just because something is, you know, somebody makes a decision to do something, that it's necessarily bad. Things are going to happen even if they decide not to make the band.
Bob, let me get an answer for you. Thanks very much for the call, comment, and question. Troy.
Well, first of all, I appreciate the call. I appreciate the intent and what he's saying. Appreciate your faith, sir, and sharing that as well. And really what I hear in your voice is a concern. And I think we're all concerned. And if we really get past the polarization, let's talk about why we should be concerned. Obviously, the caller brings up the safety issues and the safety of citizens. Number one responsibility of any government. That's important. But, you know, we also need to, as we're crafting that and trying to figure out how to make that work for our country, but we also need to be concerned about those young people that got called up in this ban that need life-altering surgeries. We need to be concerned about those numerous individuals that serve this country by helping our military that saved numerous American lives that got called up in this ban. Those families that have, that because of their religious beliefs have been persecuted. So I think there's concern, and if we start talking more, as the caller did, about our concerns and safety and concerns for our fellow human beings, maybe we can get past this polarization and come up with something that works.
Marvin.
I think a better idea would have been, without all the grandiose statements, and it's unfortunate that all of those nations that were identified, I think it's seven of them, are all of one religious orientation. I think what would have been better, and I'm second-guessing the person who runs this country, is to probably focus...
Last time I checked, that's a constitutional right, though. We're allowed to do that.
But to focus on just one country.
Yeah.
And to prove our vetting capabilities. And at that point, we could move to yet another country and another country and another country, which would send a very clear message that this is serious business and that we're about making sure that our citizens are protected. But talking about protection, and you've alluded to it, and that is how people get into this country. Canada is the biggest sieve. I mean, people can declare citizenship in Canada very easy, and they can walk over the border, and they're here already. So we need to talk about vetting from the north and to end the process of ethnocentrism, which portends that everyone coming from the north is okay, and that's not the case. They pulled over a Greyhound bus not too long ago on near Windsor, and they found people on the bus that were suspicious, and they arrested them. So Canada is beginning to take hold and to begin to answer some of these questions. But I think, and I agree, we need to have a very effective process, one that's not intrusive, one that's not racial, and one that's not filled with religiosity, but one that truly looks at people who will come here to make a difference in our society, people who understand what we're about, people who understand democracy and have an ideology that is at least pardonable with ours.
I want to ask, pick up on a point Marvin made earlier where he talked about homegrown terrorists, because one of the arguments that we hear, at least with the ban on refugees, is so far there haven't been any refugees involved, at least on our soil, in terrorist attacks or anything like that. The ones who have committed the worst atrocities actually were born here and were citizens.
Let me comment on that.
Yeah.
Because we have to look at 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And the good old boy in Florida who was spraying the trees, the orange trees there, mm-hmm. and happened to have a 737 simulator.
Mm-hmm.
And for the right amount of money, taught mm-hmm. them. And he asked, he says, all you want to do is land the plane? He says, we don't want to know how to take off. We just want to know how to land.
Well, actually, they wanted to go the other way. They wanted to know how to take off.
Either
not
one.
How to land, because they weren't worried about bringing...
Yeah, well, they're landing into the side of the
yeah,
buildings.
That's what I'm saying. They weren't worried about bringing it down.
But the point is, mm-hmm. we need to teach people in strategic places not to make bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And that situation should have been halted. It could have been caught.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somebody came in and says, I want to learn to drive a car, but all I want to do is drive it backwards. Well, the first thing I'm going to say is, like, what's with that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I guess where I was going with
I'm
this
sorry.
Is, no. And I mean, your point's a valid one, is that some of this, and the 9/11 example, I think, unfortunately, can be a textbook. There were all sorts of points where the, you know, security measures broke down there, and that people could have intervened and stopped it and didn't do so. Is, you know, we're focusing a massive amount of attention on this kind of specific refugee problem when, you know, I think as all of you have made the case at some point, you know, the problem with this is that the thought really doesn't recognize borders. It travels, ideas travel now pretty much at will around the world, and it isn't necessarily hasn't been refugees. It's been folks who are you know, to use a 1950s term, fellow travelers who have done us the most damage. Should we be focusing more on that part of the problem than keeping refugees from coming into the country, Troy?
Well, I can tell you, as a former director of public safety, a chief two times over public safety as assistant city manager in a border city or a city close to the border, I can tell you that homegrown terrorism is something that's extremely concerning to our law enforcement professionals. And every city has a group that gets together, federal, local, and state officials, to review those. That is being monitored closely, working very hard to make sure that we are checking on individuals. The FBI has gone to the level of even giving some security clearance to individuals within local law enforcement to continue that flow of information. And that has worked in the times that I have been involved, where there's been a coordinated effort to review and to, quite frankly, stop some people before they could potentially cause harm in our community. So that is working very well. I know when we talk about like 9/11, there were some individuals that were involved. I believe that most individuals really trained and came from Saudi Arabia, which is not one of the bands. But I don't want to go too far in that, because we have Peter, who is really far more of an expert on what happened that day in the background than I am. But as far as locally and looking at some of the extremists, law enforcement is doing a lot of work. But here's the key, is sometimes we abdicate all those responsibilities to law enforcement. Mm-hmm. That's not just a law enforcement responsibility. As with any type of crime, citizens know what's going on in their community. If something seems unusual, just doesn't seem right, it's those phone calls that help break those big cases. And we need to be vigilant as a community, not paranoid, but just aware of our surroundings. And if we see something unusual, contact the authorities. They will not be upset if it ends up not being anything. But if you have something in your gut telling you something's not right, it probably isn't and probably needs to be looked into.
But, Troy, it goes further than that. These people come off as being, as in the Boston bombers, to be normal people who have come into the society. They are working well. But as a child, if you're being told, kill Americans, we hate Americans, that's in the back of their mind, I would suspect. And the Boston case is a prime example. I mean, all their friends said they were great kids, they were this and they were that. But the bottom line is they were not on anyone's list. You know, I can look at the people that were going to blow up the Harlem Tunnel and LaGuardia Airport, and that was an interesting one. Troy, are you aware of that one?
I am.
Yeah. And it was just within hours that they stopped these guys from blowing up the whole thing. And that was very quiet. And they had been here. One of them had been here 10 years. But they can become radicalized. And that's one of the major problems. How do you prevent the radicalization of people who are here who have been productive citizens? Troy, I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Well, and more to the point also, how do you track them or detect them if they're taking some steps to cover their tracks? I'm going to take a call right now. We're talking about immigration here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Melissa has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Melissa, welcome to the program.
Thank you. This is a very complex and requires much nuance sort of problem. And I know we're not going to solve it in this hour, but thank you for the discussion. My concern is the data from Cato has shown that there is an infinitesimal chance of being killed by a foreign-born terrorist. And I feel personally more fearful of the homegrown terrorist as well as the folks that are right-wing, extreme, white supremacists, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, especially with the returning of a lot of military to this country who have been previously activated, and the decreased scrutiny of these folks infiltrating into normalized local police departments, like, you know, FBI, DHS are not scrutinizing these. They're all putting their resources towards foreign-born terrorists, and we have a politicalization with the fear-mongering about these poor foreign-born people, terrorists, and now it becomes immigrants. So I'm just wondering what are we doing to look at the potential for terrorism from folks here, like the individual that drove from southern Indiana to California last Pride week, loaded for bear, or the people that are putting leaflets in my neighborhood about immigrants and LGBTQ that are, you know, knights of wherever. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I'm going to throw that one to Peter first, but I'll make sure everybody gets a crack at it. Peter?
Well, I think that everybody in the system is concerned about criminals. At the end of the day, terrorists are criminals, and nobody wants crime to happen any place, whether it's a small, lower-level crime, if it's a property offense, or if it's crimes against people. No one in this country is in favor of crime. And I think to offer some reassurance, there are an awful lot of people that are looking at extremist views, regardless of origin, at every level of government, at every level of academia, at every level of a lot of the social service and support organizations, because this is a very real threat. It's not the only threat that there is, but it is a very real threat. And there are a number of organizations who specialize in right-wing extremism. There are organizations that specialize in left-wing extremism. And then there are a number of organizations that look at extremism that has its roots internationally, as well as now a few that are focusing on the domestic stuff. So I think everybody is there, but at the end of the day, what Troy mentioned earlier and Marvin has echoed it, is that almost every one of these plots is undone by some citizen who sees something that doesn't make sense for the environment that they're seeing it in. Most kitchens that I know have a single pressure cooker, if they have any at all. If you see somebody at the store buying a bunch of them, that's a pretty good indication that there could be a problem.
That's a clue.
Yeah. Marvin.
Well, I think the thing that separates people in this nation, unfortunately, and it's getting worse, and that is income inequality. There are people who wake up in the morning and their profession is to spend, bin, and mutilate you and rob your house. And you see this on television all the time. And things that don't help are shows like American Greed, which is just outrageous. And you see how people are getting away in many ways. And even our professional people today are in scams. And we're trying to scam each other. It's all about money. It's not about love thy neighbor. None of that. That has been washed out in the last 20 or 30 years. I don't know what you feel about
Troy,
that.
You have a thought you want to end?
I just want to share the caller when she's talking about domestic and then international type terrorism threats. Yes, there's more of a threat to the average American from some type of crime being committed. But when it comes to terrorist activities that we traditionally talk about, there have been billions upon billions of dollars that have been spent since 9/11 by your local agencies throughout this nation, dealing primarily with domestic type terrorism. But when you think of international terrorism, Not like 9/11 and things where so many people died, but it hurt the economy of the United States. We're talking about everyone being affected if power grids go down. These are the things that are real that we have to manage. But, you know, the doctor brought up some very good points about what we're dealing with here and why people become extremists after living this land of opportunity. And it's because of a lot of issues, a lack of opportunities, a lack of employment, a lack of education. And then mental health issues. We have to do a better job as a society addressing these needs, or these issues are going to become more complex over time.
We are talking about the immigration ban, immigration restrictions that have become the hallmark of the early days of the Trump presidency. My guests are Peter Bearing. He is a security expert. Troy Riggs, who's former Indianapolis police chief and is now with the Sagamore Institute. And Marvin Scott, who's a professor of sociology and criminology at Butler University. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about President Trump's immigration ban, immigration restrictions. My guests are Peter Bearing, he's a security expert, Troy Riggs, who's former Indianapolis police chief and now is with the Sagamore Institute, and Marvin Scott, who is a professor of sociology and criminology at Butler University. Gotten a tweet from a listener named Medena. I hope I pronounced that right. And if you want to find us on Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. She asks, what part of the current refugee vetting is insufficient? Additionally, is the process different per country? Peter, I'm going to throw that one to you.
Well, I think the concern that has been expressed in support of the ban is that we have watered down our vetting process to allow large numbers of people in. I don't know that there is a lot of hard evidence to support that conclusion, but that is what has been frequently articulated in support of the ban. Many other countries that are used as sort of the reference point for our own immigration questioning and behaviors typically are doing tiered screening. They're doing multi-level authentication of people that come and present themselves for entry. There are contextual questions that people are required to answer, and occasionally they randomize more involved examinations. And it's the randomization that has the biggest benefit in terms of keeping would-be terrorists or other criminals off balance, because they never know exactly what it's going to be. One of the things in security that you don't do is you don't tell everybody all your countermeasures, and you certainly don't ask everybody all of the same questions, but you mix it up a little bit so as to do that. My sense is that our process that we are using for legal permanent residents, for green card issuance, for those who have permanent work or travel visas, and those who have dual citizenship, that those processes are very thorough. They're very involved.
Well, there's one that maybe you can address it, and that is Angela Merkel and the people she led into Germany. I mean, is that a model, or is that one for catastrophe? I don't understand how that worked, because a lot of people were hurt, put out of their homes, and, you know, there's a group of people who just don't like them, and they want them out of their country.
We've gotten a related question via Facebook from a listener named Rex. And, again, our Facebook, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Rex writes, it already takes 18 months to 2 years for refugees to get a visa for admission to the country. They're subjected to far more than a criminal background check. Just a second. Screen flitted away. To more than a criminal background check and a perusal of their DMV records, contrary to what some of President Trump's supporters seem to think. What more is necessary to make the vetting process extreme, and he puts extreme in quotes. Troy.
Well, and let me say this. Is there a pretty robust system? In many cases, yes. And being involved in law enforcement for 27 years, I can tell you they've missed some people, and they have missed some warning signs. But let's say this. Let's say we have the best vetting process that human beings can develop. If they're coming from a country that's in disarray, that has a dictator, and they're not sharing information with you, it's hard to properly vet someone. In the United States of America, there's electronic backgrounds on everybody, because everybody uses banking and things, and you can check someone. But in some of these other countries, that doesn't exist. It's a very difficult process, and I think it says a lot about the process we have now that we haven't had some of the violence that people thought we would, and I think that's because of the hundreds of millions of dollars been spent. But yet, when you have a place in disarray like some of these countries, not just the seven, some other countries as well, that process can be outstanding, But if they're not getting good information from the country that they're coming from or an availability to do some background checks, it takes a little bit longer. And sometimes that involves things like psychological evaluations, questioning, and different things that they have to look at long term. That takes a little bit more than a few days. Not that the time frame should be much more because it takes longer to do that. It may, but just because of sheer numbers you're dealing with coming from countries when there is some type of civil war or people are being persecuted for their beliefs.
We're talking about immigration and the immigration bans specifically here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what David has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. David, welcome to the program.
Great program. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
Just have a question, maybe one and a half questions. One is, obviously, travel ban isn't unprecedented for this country. We've had a travel ban against Cuba for quite some time. I was wondering how the proposed travel ban that Trump is proposing would be different than that was against Cuba or other countries. I think we even had some restrictions with Russia during a period of time. And then also, would a travel ban or extreme vetting have prevented 9/11? I'm not sure, you know, all the details of the travel vetting that they're talking about doing. Would that have prevented a 9/11 from occurring? Those are my questions.
I'm going to start with Marvin on that one, but I want to hear, particularly on the second part, Peter's thoughts. Marvin, we'll start with you.
I don't think any vetting process is 100%. Let me say that up front. I don't, you know, take an act of God to vet these people effectively. So we have to go sometimes with our gut. We have to go with what we know to be right and the information that we can get from the other country. But what I find interesting as I travel the world, the people who are the leaders in those countries are very satisfied unless there's some espionage or some other intrigue. They don't want to go any place. They stay there. So it's the immigrant pool that we pull from, which are the people who are less educated in some instances and are not the high-tech kinds of people that they're talking about we're sending back. Mm-hmm. So that is what we're dealing with, people who are not linguistically inclined to amalgamate into the wider society. And this creates an interesting dichotomy.
Peter.
Well, I think Marvin's right that there is a distinction between the traveler who presents him or herself at a checkpoint at a gateway airport who is proposing to come here to visit, to do business, or even to flee, than the wholesale large groups of refugees who arrive by boat, arrive by bus, arrive by whatever mechanism, who are looking for opportunity, looking to get away from being persecuted from sexual trafficking or any of the other horrors that we know about. And he's right about the other part of this, and that is that none of these systems is infallible. They all have limitations, and the limitations is that they're necessarily reliant on information, some of which is candidly suspect. Troy has mentioned it a couple of times this afternoon that if you're coming here from some parts of the world where people live in a cardboard box, they have no access to electronic anything, they're eating one meal a day, if that, and the only thing that they have access to is some church service that may or may not be teaching religious tenets, they may be teaching highly politicized tenets, those are bigger challenges because it takes much more time. There are language barriers. There are cultural barriers because no matter how many classes we send any of us to in a foreign language, we will never have native fluency in many of these places, and we certainly won't have native appreciation for all of the customs. And therein lies one of the big challenges of wholesale evaluation of large numbers of people, and that certainly does speak to a more comprehensive process than perhaps has been there. But as in all things, the devil's in the details.
Gotten a tweet from a listener named Matt, and you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Matt writes, "You say today's show is about immigration, but all I'm hearing about is terrorism. What is America losing when it bans immigrants?" To be fair, Matt, we did a show last week where we talked about the costs of the ban in human terms. And we've asked the guest today to speak about, you know, the security argument for the most part associated with immigration. And I've been listening to them pretty carefully. I actually have not heard a single one of them come out in favor of the ban as implemented. They're saying that there are immigration concerns that we need to deal with. Barbara on Facebook also has written, and our Facebook address is NoLimitsWFYI. Barbara writes, "I listened to Secretary Kelly today on Morning Edition. He stated that they might be able to lift the ban on some of the seven mentioned countries, but some might need to stay on. If you use perfection as the standard, it becomes impossible to reach, excusing them to keep the bans. He also said there might be more that might be added. This is like watching a first strike that really intends to become a Muslim ban. I believe that Giuliani was actually honest when he said Trump wanted a legal way to block Muslims." One of the arguments that we've heard against the ban, Peter, and I'm going to throw this one to you first, but I'd also like to hear Troy's thoughts on that, is that it's proved to be, when we talk about the radicalization of Muslims, it's been a pretty effective recruiting tool. Is there, first, any kind of legal argument for banning people based on their faith tradition, and B, you know, even if there were a legal way to do it, is it a good idea? Peter.
Well, I think that we have a fairly well-established constitutional provision that says absolutely not. We have taught law enforcement people for years that we look at behaviors not at ethnicity or race. That we don't look at who you hang around with necessarily, although there are one or two bright line exceptions to that. In terms of your political views, that is completely transparent. We don't care about that. So I think as you look at this to say, well, do we just wholesale ban any one particular religious group, any one particular ethnic group, that's preposterous. The law absolutely doesn't allow that. The law does allow us to put reasonable restrictions on immigration, movement, and activities for the safety and well-being of the republic and the safety and well-being of the citizenry. Now, what those measures look like, and these are magic legal words, those are reasonable restrictions. And they have to be administered with an even hand, without regard to any of the long litany of things that would make us into a protected class. That is one of the challenges of this particular conversation, is that it has become very political very quickly, in part because of how it was rolled out. One might have expected that a new administration would have been somewhat more thoughtful and consulted the long-term professionals that make up the Departments of Homeland Security, the Departments of State, the various folks that run, actually, border protection and customs and those sorts of agencies, and then roll out a more thoughtful, tiered kind of a program as opposed to a blanket, this is what we're going to do on day two.
Troy.
Well, I agree with Peter. Obviously, the threshold has to be, is it a danger? Could they potentially be a danger to the United States? Not religion, not ethnic background. I mean, that is very clear. The other thing that we haven't really talked about today is while this court case is moving its way through a court of appeals, certainly, most likely, I would think, ends up at the Supreme Court, was when we talk about, you know, are we their rights as individuals coming here? Do they have rights and that? But what other people think are not talking about is there are companies here that are recruiting people to come to this United States to fill jobs that are needed and their expertise is needed. And they're not able to get here. Are we infringing upon the rights of American citizens that are searching for individuals to take their company to another level, which helps our country? There's a lot of issues at stake here. There's a lot of conversation needs to take place. Obviously, the most important is, are we safe as a country? But we've been open our entire existence as a country. That will continue. But it certainly does have to be managed as well and has to be managed in a safe and thorough environment.
We're talking about the immigration ban here on No Limits. We're getting close on time. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call. Allison, welcome to the program. I'm going to ask you to be quick.
Okay. I guess in terms of looking at a policy around bans, I wonder if there's not another policy that we should be looking at, and that is about gun control. You know, how do we – should we not be considering that issue in terms of keeping ourselves safe? You let someone in and their access to guns and other weapons is a free-for-all. And so I just seems like there could be a more comprehensive policy we could be using about protecting ourselves against terrorists.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. I'm going to throw that one to Troy. Troy, I think we've only got about 30 seconds.
Well, I don't want to get into a Second Amendment debate, but I will say, obviously, not only weapons available when people come, but there's also things in your local hardware store that can be utilized. That's why the vetting process. But let me just say this about weapons. 300 million weapons in the United States. It's unconstitutional to ban those, but if you did ban them, 300 million weapons are not going to go away overnight.
Already they're here.
Yeah, but the other thing is that education is big business. Take Purdue, for instance. 24% of their students are foreign-born, and that outnumbers in many ways the other students coming from other states for cheaper education. We need to get a firm grip on that. And another thing to say, Muslims have been in this country from day one, and we need to understand that. We need to reach out to them and create a way of helping us to identify the things that we cannot identify.
That'll have to be the last word, unfortunately. We could have talked about this for another couple hours, I think. I'd like to thank my guests, Peter Bearing, Troy Riggs, and Marvin Scott, for what has been a really lively conversation, and our listeners for some great questions, comments. Sorry we couldn't get to them all. Hope you'll tune in again next Tuesday. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cerzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.